From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present more of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank is talking with historian Richard Weikart, author of Darwinian Racism: How Darwinism Influenced Hitler, Nazism, and White Nationalism. Let's now join Hank and Dr. Weikart in their conversation.
I think as long as we're talking about evolutionary ethics, we need to mention Richard Dawkins. I don't think it's a coincidence that Dawkins fully approves a scientific experimentation to produce half-human, half-ape hybrids, and hopes that these monstrosities will finally convince us as human beings that we're not all that special, that we're merely insignificant pieces of matter in motion.
Exactly. And Dawkins is, again, not an outlier in that kind of view as well. In fact, all the way back in the late 19th and early 20th century, there were people who were talking about doing artificial insemination experimentation with humans and chimps and such to try to artificially inseminate either a chimp with human sperm or a human with chimp sperm to try to come up with some, you know, creature between humans and apes to try to, again, sort of provide more evidence for evolution, try to break down people's ideas that humans are somehow special. And in fact, Haeckel and others fought against what they called anthropocentrism. What they meant by anthropocentrism is the idea that humans are special. Humans have unique status. And that's an idea that we're still seeing in our day quite frequently. Peter Singer is just one example of that. There's a University of Texas ecologist who made some very interesting comments in the early 2000s along those lines, fighting against anthropocentrism. And he actually claimed, this is a guy named Eric Pianca, he actually claimed that it would be good if 90% of the human population were wiped out because we as humans aren't special and we're ruining the planet. And so you get a lot of people, especially in the animal rights movement and other things like that, who are claiming that humans just aren't special. You know, and so we need to sort of get over that idea. And that idea comes out of the idea that we've just evolved, just like every other creature, and we're just an accidental collection of atoms.
What's so disturbing, if I can put it this way, as I read your writings as a historian, is that I'm constantly making parallels between what happened in Nazi Germany and what's happening in our own culture, but much more insidiously, in the sense that people don't see the logical consequences of the theories that they're embracing. You have a chapter in your book titled Evolutionary Theory in Nazi Schools, and there you see it for its stark, disturbingly nefarious ramifications, where you have a curriculum that says humans disturb natural selection and help the sick and weak. Now, we as Christians think about how important it is to help the sick and the weak. I was just in a leper colony a few weeks ago and saw how Christian missions are providing water and medical assistance for the least of these in Nazi Germany, but also in some modern thought, to help the sick and the weak isn't really helpful at all. It's simply retarding the evolutionary process.
Yes, and that's exactly the mentality that was behind the eugenics movement that we've already discussed. But yes, you're right, that helping the weak and sick is considered helping those who are considered, quote, unfit, who otherwise would perish, and stymieing evolutionary progress. And in fact, what's interesting is that there were quite a number of thinkers, Darwin himself, and also many other Darwinists in the late 19th, early 20th century, who, even though they claimed that morality had evolved, and so morality itself, they thought, didn't have any objectivity about it, on the other hand, they somehow tried to smuggle back in some kind of objectivity by claiming that the evolutionary process itself was what determined what's moral. So whatever advances the biological evolution is good, and whatever, you know, stymies evolutionary progress is bad. And so that's where they get the ideas where, you know, that we need to try to eliminate those who are weak and sick. And so the way the Nazis did that is they did start off with compulsory sterilization in 1933 to 34. But then they advanced from that in 1939 once the war broke out and they thought they could get away with it. They went ahead and advanced to outright killing of people with disabilities. And so the Nazis over the course of World War II killed approximately 200,000 Germans with disabilities because they thought they were unfit. And so they wanted to get rid of what they called the hereditary taint of those people.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely amazing. They murdered some 200,000 disabled Germans, and it wasn't just the Germans. They also murdered tens of thousands of disabled people in occupied territories.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, they began the program of extermination of people with disabilities actually began in Poland when they overran Poland, and they began doing it in late 1939 in Poland, but then they shifted the program to Germany itself. But yeah, they killed disabled people. I don't have the exact statistics, but it was tens of thousands in France, in Poland, and in other parts of every place they occupied, essentially.
As a historian, how do you provide a rationale for Hitler and the Germans saying that they, as Nordic people, were superior to other people? I mean, how did Nordic people get to be superior over other, quote-unquote, races of people?
Yeah, interestingly, Nordic racists, and this is before Hitler. By the way, Hitler really didn't have any original ideas, at least that I know of. The way that he put them together might have been original, but all the ideas that Hitler had were being put forward by many racist thinkers before him. And there was already a school of Nordic racists before Hitler's time who argued that the Nordic race had become superior because of the environmental conditions that they had had to endure. And so they went through what biologists today would call selection pressure. And so this selection pressure, they thought, was brought about by the harsh climate of the North, because they thought the Nordic people, of course, had evolved in Scandinavia and northern Germany. And so they were talking about the climatic conditions. They also believed the ice ages played a role in it. So the harshness of the ice ages, they thought, had made the Nordic peoples more intellectually efficient because they had to think more. They thought made them more cooperative because they had to work together more to offset these climatic conditions. On the other hand, they thought that the black Africans had been living in tropical climates, and because of that, they thought they didn't need to work very hard. They could just sort of find their food here and there, so they didn't have to, you know, face the strenuous pressures that the Nordic race had. So this was their explanation. The difference in climates had created these different intellectual and moral capacities in these races. Now, what's interesting today is that those same ideas are being recycled by white nationalists. You'll find those exact same ideas on white nationalist websites claiming that the ice ages and such had made the Nordic race superior and the black Africans are inferior.
I don't want to get too far off topic, but you mentioned climate conditions. Can you weigh in on climate change? I mean, there has always been climate change from my perspective. You mentioned Ice Age. I remember reading in Time magazine, in fact, it was a cover story on the looming Ice Age. Now we're talking about warming conditions. Is it true to say, or is it superficial to say, that climate is always changing and has always changed over time, and there's good substantiation for that?
You know, one of the interesting things, and I think, in looking historically at the way that scientists are talking about climate change, especially in relation to the issue that we already raised of eugenics and other kinds of things, is that there seem to be two things that they seem to use to try to motivate people to embrace their particular positions, and that motivates them too. One is extrapolation. And that's a key problem with Darwinism too, by the way. Darwinism thrives on extrapolation. That is, you take small change and you extrapolate it into large change. And that's really the whole basis of Darwinism, is extrapolation. And the problem is that if you look at Darwin's Origin of Species, the things that he extrapolated from, like breeding different pigeon breeds, you cannot extrapolate it indefinitely, but Darwin thought he could. Darwin thought he could just extrapolate that breeding process and it can just go on, you know, those changes can keep just going on and on and on and on to, you know, create new species, new genera, new classes, and all these different new organisms. Well, we now know that that didn't work. Now, later on, scientists came up with new ideas of mutations to try to bridge that gap, but the extrapolation is still a problem for them, and that's a lot of Christian biologists who disbelieve in evolution today argue that microevolution does make a lot of sense, but macroevolution doesn't, and that's the problem with Darwin. They're extrapolating from the micro to the macro. The same problem of extrapolation comes in with the eugenics movement. They were looking at some of these reproductive trends, and they started getting scared because they thought, oh no, these people are out reproducing us and we're going to have this problem. Well, they extrapolated from small sample sets.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with historian Richard Weikart. Inspired by arguments from both Charles Darwin and early Darwinist, the Nazis viewed the Nordic race as superior to other races and set about advancing human evolution by ridding the world of what they deemed inferior races and individuals. As historian Richard Weikart shows in his book Darwinian Racism, similar ideas circulate today among white nationalists and neo-Nazis who routinely use Darwinian theory in their propaganda to advance a racist agenda. The book Darwinian Racism is not only careful history, it's also a wake-up call. To receive your copy of Darwinian Racism, How Darwinism Influenced Hitler, Nazism, and White Nationalism by Dr. Richard Weikart, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org.
For decades, Hank Hanegraaff has shared the truth of the historic Christian faith by answering questions over the radio, defending the faith through the written word, and preaching from pulpits around the globe. Today, he is ready to share his life in Christ, as detailed in his most profoundly personal piece of penmanship to date, Truth Matters, Life Matters More. Hank feels closer to Christ than ever before and wants you to learn from his experiences, as recounted in Truth Matters, Life Matters More, so that you can join him on life's greatest journey, the journey toward union with God in Christ. To receive your copy of Truth Matters, Life Matters More, The Unexpected Beauty of an Authentic Christian Life, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us at equip.org.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. The number of wolves surrounding the Christian flock is growing, and they relish nothing more than docile sheep utterly incapable of defending themselves. From militant secularists at home to militant Islamists abroad, the assaults on biblical Christianity are growing dangerously. But Christian Research Institute support team members aren't in favor of feeding these wolves. Instead, each day they're making possible an array of outreaches that defang these wolf packs with solid arguments and evidence that have stood the test of time. What's more, support team members are equipping themselves themselves with CRI's Equipping Essentials, a hand-picked collection of the best apologetics tools around. Your selection of resources, along with a complimentary subscription to the Christian Research Journal, are just our way of saying thanks. To learn more about the benefits of membership, simply visit equip.org. Once again, that's equip.org. Let's rejoin Bible Answer Man host Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, historian Richard Weikart, in their conversation.
That's the problem with Darwinism. They're extrapolating from the micro to the macro. The same problem of extrapolation comes in with eugenics movement. They were looking at some of these reproductive trends, and they started getting scared because they thought, oh no, these people are out reproducing us, and we're going to have these problems. Well, they extrapolated from small sample sets. And the same thing, I think, is happening with the climate change thing, too. There's this problem of extrapolation, which, you know, can be tricky. And that's, I think, going to be one of the things that we're going to have to see if it really does pan out, if you can really extrapolate from this small set to something larger. The other key issue that I think is both characteristic within the eugenics movement and the climate change movement is this fear factor. There's tremendous fear that's being generated. And one of the problems that I have with climate change, and I don't want to get too far on this, it's kind of off topic here, but one of the problems that I have with the climate change issue is that even if it is true that the climate keeps on increasing in temperature, there are both good and bad things that could be possible consequences of those. But you never hear anyone talk about the good consequences that could come about by global warming. You always hear the negative consequences. And by the way, anything proves it. If you have a drought or if you have floods, doesn't matter. It's all, you know, it's all a consequence of global warming. So anything that happens, they can claim is a consequence. Anything bad that happens, I should say, they'll claim is a consequence of global warming. Anything good that happens, they won't talk about that.
Well, this is a little off point as well, but you are well versed in so many different areas. I wonder if you can expand on that a little bit. Again, I'm a little bit sensitive about all of this, having come back from a country where there's somewhere around 1.3, 1.4 billion people, and so many of them do not have fresh water, where we're spending tens of trillions of dollars, the global economy, on a phantom problem or something that might at least be phantom to some extent,
yeah.
Where with, I forget the exact number, the number 200 billion sticks in my mind. For 200 billion, we could provide fresh water for everyone on the planet that doesn't have it presently. So instead of fighting a phantom problem, we could be taking care of the real needs of people. And I mean, I've seen it firsthand where women, particularly in the caste system, you have the outcasts or the deletes. They can't drink from the water of people in the caste system. And so they just don't have fresh water. They're drinking polluted water. We could be providing fresh water for them instead of fighting phantom problems.
Yeah. And even if the problem isn't a phantom problem, I think one of the problems with this whole discourse is that people become so fixated on one problem at a time. And I don't know if, I think the media just sort of operates this way too. The media sort of tends to focus our attention on one thing, and we get so fixated on that one thing that we forget about everything else. And even if it is a real problem, we get so fixated on that one problem that we end up with all sorts of solutions that might even be worse than the problem itself. And so, you know, some of the solutions we have to global warming might actually be worse than global warming. So we need to be very careful, I think, in that respect.
What about the moniker, follow the science? We hear that all the time now. And as I mentioned in the prologue to this podcast, anyone who has spent even a modicum of time looking at the progression of scientific speculation knows that academics or scientists are not impervious to groupthink. You got tenure, you got social dynamics, you got grants, you have so many different factors that are in play. And so you have this herd mentality, and you've ably pointed out the herd mentality when it comes to eugenics, but we have that all over the place, and we have to be very careful with that moniker, follow the science. It sounds reasonable, but in many cases, it isn't reasonable at all.
No, it isn't. And if you look at the history of science, you see again and again and again places where scientists were incredibly wrong, like in the racism issue, you know, so-called scientific racism. Back in the 1890s, early 1900s, scientists were insisting that racism was scientific. And if you question that, they sometimes, I've actually seen this, they have criticized people who were anti-racist, saying, you're letting your religion get in the way. You know, you're letting these egalitarian ideas from your religion, you know, color your thinking, but science teaches us, you know, that races are different and that they have different intellectual capacities, and then they go on and on. So, yeah, if you look at the history of science, you see all sorts of episodes of this, and that's just one that I've just given you, scientific racism. Interestingly, however, we tend to have this hubris about us as an intellectual elite that scientists today will say, well, that was then. You know, that was back in the day. We've overcome those ideas. You know, we now have better, new, improved ideas about all these things. And so we can recognize these things in the past, but a lot of times people don't want to recognize in the present. And so, as you're suggesting, there are many things in the present that scientists believe. It's part of the consensus, so they think they have to believe it, and many of them do. But they don't even question it. They don't even think about it. And if you dare to question it, they will automatically say, oh, your religion is getting in the way. You know, you're not thinking about things scientifically here or whatever. And so, yeah, the scientists very often get caught up in these ideas. And the closer, by the way, that you get to dealing with who we are as humans, the bigger a problem that is for science. And the sciences of psychology and sociology, if they can be called sciences, they are now undergoing what some people are referring to as a replication crisis. And what the replication crisis means is that some of these sort of textbook examples of psychological experiments that for years psychologists were teaching to their students at the universities, they're trying to replicate those experiments and failing. And we're not just talking about one or two things. We're talking about dozens and dozens of experiments that were considered to be, you know, the truth. And now scientists are recognizing that there are problems with them. And so this is becoming a big problem in the social sciences, especially. So again, the closer you get to humans and things that impact humans, the bigger problem this becomes in the sciences, because we have more prejudices and biases and such, and our worldview affects those things to a greater degree.
We were talking earlier about sterilization. I want to talk about transgenderism for just a moment, because effectively what is happening with a lot of people is they're being sterilized, as it were, that their metaphysics are determining their physics. In other words, instead of the other way around, where we're looking at biological sex, we're allowing our perceptions of gender to determine whether we're male or female. And as a result of that metaphysical determination, we're making drastic physical decisions that cannot be reversed.
Yeah, and that can be very tragic. And in fact, since this has become the rage in the past decade especially or so, we're also now seeing some of the consequences of that, which is people are recognizing that this didn't help them. Even if you were able to do it, people are recognizing that that didn't help them, and now there are people detransitioning, that is, going back to their original sex. But unfortunately, those who have gone through the chemical and surgical alterations now are left scarred for life. But, you know, I think the issue here, I mean, about transgenderism gets at the issue of, you know, we want to be as God. You know, we want to control everything. We don't want to be told what we are and who we are. And so we don't want to be content with how God made us. And unfortunately, some of this gets bred again in young children as they, you know, interact with peers. And, you know, I can understand why some get confused over things because they want to fit in, they want to, you know, be popular, they want all these different things, and there's a lot of pressures going on in their lives, and they think somehow that's going to be a silver bullet to, you know, if I get this change, then somehow I'll be popular, I'll be fit more with what I want to be, and then they find out it doesn't work that way.
And you see just how important the Christian worldview is, because in the Christian worldview, the soul is engendered.
Right.
So the problem here is we're decoupling biological sex from gender.
Right.
And that is a huge, huge problem. Christianity has the answer. The evolutionary hypothesis does not. I want to get back to the main and the plain that we've been talking about, and that is to get your perspective on what hard heredity is and why it is important in the debate about whether the Nazis embraced evolutionary theory.
Yeah, hard heredity is the idea that biological inheritance is passed on through DNA. Well, Nazi didn't know about DNA, but they knew that the hereditary traits were passed on biologically and such, rather than there being what's called soft heredity, which is where, you know, you have environmental things shaping them as well.
We'll have to stop here for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Join us again next time when we'll continue Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with historian Richard Weikart. Our firm commitment here at the Christian Research Institute is to defend the faith once for all delivered to the saints and equip believers to become true disciples of Jesus Christ. In appreciation for your vital gift to help strengthen and expand CRI's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches, Hank would like to send you a copy of Darwinian Racism: How Darwinism Influenced Hitler, Nazism, and White Nationalism by Dr. Richard Weikart. Just call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI. Once again, that's 888-7000-CRI, or visit our website, equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more.
Truth Matters, Life Matters More by Hank Hanegraaff is essentially two books in one, because Truth Matters, Part 1 equips Christians to defend the essential truths of the historic Christian faith. In Part 2, Hank explains why life matters more and how we can experience the height of human existence, union with God in Christ. Simply put, the map is not the territory, the menu is not the meal. We cheat ourselves of authentic union with Christ when we elevate the message above the Messiah. Truth Matters, Life Matters More is a modern classic and the magnum opus of one of the great theological minds of our time. To receive Truth Matters, Life Matters More, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift in support of the life-changing work of the Christian Research Institute. That's 888-7000-CRI, or go online to equip.org.